Blog Talk Radio. Man, guys, you are listening to Solar Records Radio. Of course, I'm Don Fleming. I'm remotely broadcasting live. Actually, I am on the road right now. But, of course, it is Friday. It is starting up the weekend, baby. Music from Dynasty. Love yeah. in the Fast Lane. And we got Wardell Fudge hanging out. Of course, you had a little, you know, microphone issue. It's okay. We want to be transparent to the listeners out there.
But, Am I good?
I can hear you.
All right. What's up, Mr. Fleming? What's going on, world? How are you?
You know, I am good. Like I said, I am on the road. Got some few things lined up right now, but I am here hanging out with you, man. I appreciate the invitation. I appreciate working with you.
Oh, the feeling's mutual always. And, man, it's just been the week is gone. I mean, I can't believe it. We are going into
can't believe it.
Wow.
Crazy how this week goes by so fast.
I know. Man, we're rushing to old age as well.
That's true.
Remember when you were in school
or whatever? I guess when you were younger, man, it would be like, you go to school on Monday and you like, Friday cannot get here any quicker. But it would go so slow.
Slow. I mean, every day felt like Monday. Man, it was uncomfortable. It was like, Lord, and when are we going to finish with this? Where is the weekend? And so,
exactly.
But we are here now, and I started off the show with Icebreaker by Dynasty as well, because I wanted, it was just a little short thing. The song Icebreaker on Dynasty's very first album was only 2 minutes and 52 seconds. And so it's almost like, you know, and then, so then we went into Dynasty's Loving the Fast thing, which was really, that was on our third album. That was fun and
aggressive. That's Second Adventure, right?
Yes, the Second Adventure. Yes, I think that's the second album. Yeah. So we had some fun, and we grew a lot. Dynasty grew a lot. And Don,
I can tell you guys had fun because when you listen to the music and then you kind of you bring those stories every Friday. Again, I want to remind everybody, every Friday celebrating the legacy of Solar. Of course, he talks all of the stories. He has guests call in from the label, and they just, you know, and to me, it just correlates to the music, understanding they had a good time doing what they did. The stories kind of, emphasize on just the good music, and it just interpreted through that good music. So, I mean, I love hearing those stories anyway. So, I'm sorry, man. I didn't mean to cut you off, but again, the floor is yours.
Oh, no. It's all good. That's perfect. And so we are just going to have a good time today celebrating the sound and just reminiscing, going back down, and playing some of those great old songs. And a lot of, sometimes you guys don't recognize that, oh, that was on Solar too. That was, and you know, it's like, so that's
exactly.
So that's why we do this and stuff. And so just to remind you guys that, Solar, we really did have not just up-tempo hits, but we had a lot of ballad hits as well. So we had a lot of fun from all the different artists with Lakeside and Shalimar and Climax and The Deal and Collage and the Brothers. What Brothers?
Oh, The Whispers.
The Whispers, those are the twin brothers, that's right. What other brothers we have?
Well, I mean, you had the Throwdown Brothers.
You're right. You're good, that's right.
You had the Throwdown Brothers, I'm just saying.
And then we had another set of brothers, too, that came from a group.
Oh, you're talking about the Callaway Brothers.
The Callaway Brothers, absolutely. So, I Want to Be Rich. Did y'all know that was on Solar? That's the, a lot of people didn't know that stuff. So there's a lot of stuff going
song
on.
Song went all the way, if I'm not mistaken, song went all the way to number 2 on the Billboard Pop Charts?
Yeah, it was hot. They were rocking and rolling.
My jam was Sir Lancelot. That was my jam. I'm just throwing it out there. Now,
I'm just saying, yeah. We all have before we get into the music, I just want to ask you, did you like Korn growing up as a kid? Korn? Corn on the cob.
Yeah,
well, I think, you know, most kids like corn on the cob because corn has kind of a sweet thing going on with it. And it just has a natural sweetness about it. And it's kind of, you know, it's so, eating off the cob is just a whole nother kind of thing. But listen, there's this thing that's going on with this little boy, this cute little black kid, he's got a thing for corn. And so I want you guys to hear this thing for corn. But on top of it, after he went to explaining his thing about corn, then somebody took it and made it into a song. So I'm going to play it for you back to back, okay? So check it out.
I really like corn.
What do you like about corn?
Ever since I was told that corn is real, it tasted good.
Did you think corn wasn't real?
But when I tried it with butter, everything changed. I love corn. Corn.
Do you think everyone should be eating corn?
No, not everyone has to like it to be the best.
Yeah.
Everyone just has to try it. Have a bite.
What else are your favorite things?
I play a variety of games. Hide and seek, tag, level lava monster. Yeah, mostly corn. I mean, then look at this then. I can't imagine a more beautiful thing. It's corn.
It's corn.
Because corn is awesome.
Can you describe corn to someone who's never tasted it before?
A big lump with knobs. It has the juice. It's the part that mostly makes me like the corn.
How much do you think corn should cost?
$1. I hope you will have a corn-tastic day.
A corn-tastic day?
What? It's just a pun about corn. If you anyone loves corn, if you come to me, I can tell you all about it.
Do you like corn?
No.
Have you ever had corn before?
No.
I really like corn.
What do you like about corn?
It's corn! A big corn with knobs. It has the juice.
The voice accent is so cute. Oh my God. Don, are you there?
I'm speechless.
I know you
are. I'm like, what the hell?
It is so cute. He says, It's calm. And he said, can you describe it? He says, isn't the lumps, you got the big lumps in the middle, and it's got the juice.
Right.
You gotta see this kid. I think he's about 4 or 5 years old. It's so cute. It's so cute. I'm gonna send it to you, Don. But I just, when I saw that and I heard his voice and I see how much he was like, it's corn. You can't. How could you not like it? You gotta try it. It's like, he's so excited about corn. It's the best thing in the world to this kid.
Okie dokie.
Okie dokie pokey. Man, oh man, I tell you. So you never heard that before, Hunda?
That ring a bell.
It's gone viral. It's gone viral and on Instagram. And it's crazy. I'm gonna send it to you, Don, because you got to see the little kid too. It'll take you there. It will take you there. So man. So anyway, speaking of taking you there, are you guys ready to get on the fantastic voyage? Are y'all ready?
Yeah.
That is
and
where
corn.
We are going.
corn and lakeside, man.
It's time.
That's great.
Get on the voyage. here with us. And we thank y'all for tuning in today. Let's have a great time on Phil R. Records Radio. Don Simmons and Wardell Posse. Here we go.
No job. It's live. It's all the way live. Don't even have to run. Don't even have to drive. It's live. Look at this live. Just forget about the trouble and your 9 to 5. And just stay alone. That's what you do. Just stay alone. Now the dude's so fucking hate. What do you think? What is it called? It's on the Lakeside Bank.
Operate, goodbye, operate, I make a deal, take the job.
This demeanor, man. I love that. Love it, love it.
Yeah, I did. That love was it. Exactly. As a matter of fact, I was trying to give you that Midnight Star special song, and I pushed the other one, and I said, oh, I like that one, too.
Oh, you know, I like that. You know, I like that song anyway.
Oh, yeah. Curiosity is what I was going to write. That's your song, right? That's when you love Midnight Star.
I love all of them, man. So, you can go no wrong with Midnight Star.
Can't go wrong. All right. That's what I like here. Man, oh, man. Don, you're still in shock about that what I played earlier, aren't you, with that little boy?
Yeah.
Come on, boy. And so it's the Korn song now. They made the Korn song. And it's so... Oh, Don, I sent it to you. So when you get a chance, it's in your phone. Just look at
it. Check it out.
You're going to fall in love with a little boy like me. He's so cute. He's so into it. See, I love passion. And he has that passion. He's passionate about that Korn. And he's like, you know, I mean, he said some things that was just really like have a Korn-tastic day. What?
That's funny.
I mean, it's just like, he's so creative with his Korn, and he just loves it, and he's so cute, and missing teeth and everything, because he's just chewing on that Korn so much. It's so cute. But anyway, guys, I want to also give a shout out to our friends overseas. What's up, everybody? How you guys doing? We hope you are good and blessed and safe and having a wonderful beginning of your weekend. As we know, it's evening time over there, and to our friends down in South Africa, same thing. Much love to you guys. We recognize that evening over there in the beautiful British colony, South Africa. I love it so much down in South Africa, and I only wish I could just appear there, because that flight is so long, 22 hours in the plane. I'm burnt out, man. So, and I had jet lag when I got to South Africa for about 2 weeks. I was sleeping constantly. I was like, and I thought I developed a new love for sleeping. I was like, oh, I love sleeping. In the middle of the day, I just, oh, yeah. As a matter of fact, in the studio, I made a mattress. I, you know, put these things together and had a sheet, and I would just crash right in the middle of like my session. I was just going, I was going to take a break for a second.
Oh, wow.
I'm telling you, the jet lag got me. So, because it was like, you know, 10 hours from Los Angeles to London, and then another 12 hours from London to not Cape Town, but to Johannesburg. And it was, that 12 hours.
Now, how long did you stay in South Africa?
9 months.
Nine months, man.
I was only supposed to be gone for 3 months, but after that long flight, man, I wasn't trying to come back. I'm going to stay as long as I can. And, you know, fortunately for me, you know, there was, you know, I was producing people, so I was making money. I wasn't just like on, Mr. Deep Pockets or anything. I was working and making money while
right.
I was there. And when the work was done, I was done. I had to get back to my family. But it was great just being down there and going in the clubs, and they loved Solar. Oh my God. They were playing all of our stuff. And one of the owners of the record company had his own club. And so I would go to his club. His name is Chris Galakis. And Chris had his own club downtown. And I would go to his club, and it was always jam, man. And whenever they played anything from Solar, woo, the floor was jammed. And it was just, it was fun. I really miss it and stuff. I had a great time down there. And I learned a lot about
the people
that were serving, you know, and taking care of us, you know, driving us, you know, around. I mean, they are amazing people. They are the ones that actually... They are the ones that made me fall in love with South Africa because of the people. They are so, they're like in their own space. Like, listen, we don't want to get used to all this new technology stuff. We just want to live life the way that we've been living, you know. They like living off the land. They're not all into all that special new stuff. Leave us alone, you know. And so what happens is that we, as a society, not necessarily us literally, but we as a society, you know, try to convert people into what we think is good. And it's like that, no, we're not interested in your stoplights in the streets and, you know, so many. And unfortunately for me, I had a real bad experience with hitting someone that was just ran across the street in the middle of the night, you know, and it freaked me out so bad. And I remember just, you know, constantly asking my attorney, why can't I go to the hospital and see this person? I want to know they're still alive. I want to know they're okay. And she was like, no, you just need to just back off. Just, you know, let it just, you know, I couldn't understand it, you know. And as a matter of fact, she's still my friend. The attorney in South Africa, I talk to her periodically, and she's still my friend. So much love to you, sweetheart. And, you know, so, for some reason, I can't, her name's not coming to my mind. But anyway,
man.
I'm catching up to you. So it's all
good. I know, man.
It's all good.
Back in my day.
Oh, yeah. I know. We got those stories.
You know what?
Right?
Let me ask you something, man. And I know it's a little cliche. And then, of course, this is probably for all the listeners who's just tuning in. And again, I'm going to ask you a weird question. It's, like I said, it's going to be a little cliche, but to me, it felt like as a kid growing up, and I always give you these, you know, these testimonials about myself. 1980 to me, I felt it was a peak year for you guys. You know, going into the new decade and everything, everyone was kind of going, you know, everyone was kind of having fun and, you know, disco was kind of, you know, kind of going out a little bit at the time. Then all of a sudden you guys pop up, 79 and 80. I mean, of course, before that, but to me, 79 and 80 was like that, those years. Now, here's the question. Did you guys ever think you guys would be that big?
Well, you know, I don't think I only can speak for myself. Definitely not. Definitely not, because you're just doing what you're doing, and you're doing it out of love and doing what you're told. And I had no idea how the machine ran, and I had no idea how this situation was going to land. All I know is that we were doing what we were supposed to do, and we all were doing our best. We put our hearts and our passion in it with Leon Silvers at the, you know, the leadership, you know, guiding us and telling us what to do. And I think the reason why you felt that way in regards to the time is because in 1979 is when we released the first platinum record from Solar, which was "And the Beat Goes On" by The Whispers. And that was the first song I ever recorded for The Whispers. So for me, that was like, whoa, really? Are you kidding me? So everything that was happening was kind of a shock. Now, this is the thing with Dynasty. We were doing not just Dynasty's record, but we did The Whispers record, which, like I just told you, And the Beat Goes On. We also did Shalamar's record, was second time around at the same time. And Carrie Lucas' record. So we were constantly in the studio recording everybody's stuff. And so we had so many records out of this within that time frame that you're talking about. It was crazy. So it was shocking, but we were like on a roll. And we knew we were on a roll because everyone kept telling us we were on a roll. And the charts and the radio. When you turned the radio on, we were on every channel all the time, all day long.
Right.
So we knew something big was happening. We just didn't know how big it was. And I definitely didn't think it was happening around the world. I thought it was just happening in our own backyard. But this was taking an effect and having an effect around the whole globe. And so, man, that was...
I hear those same type of stories when it comes to hip-hop. And I tell, you know, when I interviewed, you know, I talked to, you know, some of course, Kango Kid, of course, rest in peace to the Kango Kid from UTFO. I had a chance to talk with him, and I had a chance to talk with, you know, Kid Flick plays DJ Wiz, and, you know, because I'm a child, of course, at the same time, I was a child of hip-hop. And, you know, everything that was coming out of New York, they thought they were playing stuff, you know, just for the New Yorkers. They thought the music, you know, it wouldn't just reach a mass appeal, you know, the way it did, especially a kid from Arkansas and Texas. So, you know, they didn't know it would be as big as they, you know, they anticipated. They didn't anticipate it being that big. So, and when I hear your stories, you know, of course, it kind of, to me, it kind of parallels a lot of what these hip-hop artists say. They say, look, we were just doing it for our neighborhood. We were just doing it for our neighborhood in Brooklyn or wherever. Next thing you know, it's reaching out down to Louisiana and Texas and Arkansas. You know, all these, I absorbed all that. I absorbed all of what was coming out of Solar that year, you know, as a kid. So it's not, and let me just be the first, let me be the first to say, first of many, it wasn't just your neighborhood. It was reaching out on a world stage. And that was the beauty of what music can do and the impact of music and how good radio stations that are very genuine to their craft of getting that music out to the masses, there's no telling how far, you know, the horizon is. And I know that sound, I know I'm babbling a little bit, but I just wanted to kind of just say that. And say, you just don't know, to land the plane, you guys just don't know, you know, the impact you had on cats, especially in the South. My uncle in particular, who at the time was 20 years old himself.
Wow. That's a story, man. I mean, that's a lot going on there. And, yeah, we had no idea what the impact was. And so thank you for, man, that was a lot you just unpacked in that little story.
And of course you hear it from, you know, Motown. Of course, Berry Gordy had a bigger vision, but the artists themselves, I'm sure probably Otis will tell you, I'm sure, you know, Smokey will tell you, hey, they wanted to make music for their neighborhood in the beginning, in the very beginning. When they sang on street corners, they were just making the music for, you know, down the street. They did not know what Berry Gordy's vision was in the long run. You know, Detroit, to me, you know, what was going at Motown, again, it changed to me just the world as far as, you know, a lot of folks in Russia, folks in Japan, and, you know, all of the fanfare you get overseas, and they like, we didn't even know. We just thought we played music just, you know, around Detroit. And to hear that, you know, I can't imagine how you felt.
Wow. You know, that's so cool that you're saying that to me, because, you know, I knew that, you know, I mean, our experience was really real. I mean, because I experienced it, right? So what I shared was really true. And now to hear others, like at Motown, had that same experience, that's pretty cool, because that just lets me know that we were not alone. Like, you know, because sometimes you're so busy doing what you're doing that you're not paying attention to the reaction. You're just going, and you're just focused, and you're trying to get it done and get it going. But it never ended for us. Because we lived in the studio, so every day we would, you know, be in the studio, start probably at around noon, but that's because we didn't get up until around 10, because we're in the studio until about five.
Exactly.
You know, sometimes four, you know, 4 or 5. But we were, when we're driving home, people were driving to work. And, you know, and then they say, okay, we'll be back in studio at noon. Well, you know, people come dragging in there like around 12:30, 1 o'clock because like, we were beat up from the night before still, you know, and it depends on how far you lived away. So I said all that to say that we were always just so focused on what we were doing. We weren't out there listening and seeing how people were reacting. We didn't hardly get a chance to do that. But every once in a while, Leon would say, hey, let's go to the club and see what this song sounds like before we release it. Let's see what the people think about it. And we would take our songs, like In the Raw by the Whispers, or, you know, something by Shalimar, you know, or Dynasty. We'll take a new song that hasn't even been released yet, and we'll take it and go to the club, and we'll play it for the people that were on the dance floor. And, man, that's when we got to see, wow, they really like our stuff. And then next thing you know, it was a whole crowd of people around us and, you know, doing autographs and all that kind of stuff. But for me, it didn't click in how big it was. Like I said, it just seemed like that was just, well, that's in our neighborhood, right? That's our backyard. We just went down the street to a club, and these people love us. But I had no idea even how much people loved it on the East Coast.
Mm-hmm.
So it was definitely an experience. And just thinking about it, and now that you brought it up, that's really something else. I'm glad you brought that up because I hadn't revisited that part of what we were doing. I talk about, you know, going to the studio and recording the songs and how it felt to do that and, you know, that. But this part,
I guess it's kind of like that subconscious state that you're in where you don't know what's going on the outside. You just know what you're doing internally. You know, whether you guys talk about the wrestling or the boxing matches and things like that. A lot of people don't know that. They just know the quality of the music that came out in the radio. You know, it's not about the arguments you had with so-and-so and said, well, you got to play this. You got to play it this way on the drums. Or you got to play it. No one knows that. So you only know that. So it seems like you were just so insulated with all of the inner workings of what you were doing at the time. Again, I'm not putting words in your mouth. I just felt that, you know, it just seems like you just didn't know the impact until you just got out there. Heard the trigger point is you hearing the song on the radio driving down the coast or whatever.
Right.
You know, when you're in there, when you're in the inner workings, you're insulated from pretty much just the outside forces or outside, you know, chatter about the music until you're out there. You know, again, it's just a little point of just driving down the road and hearing it on the radio.
Yeah, I mean, that's when we, like every once in a while on a Friday or Saturday night, we'll go out to a club, which is very unusual. And then we would go, you know, we get in the Jeep or something and we'll drive out to Westwood. Go to a club. That's where all the college kids hung out at, by UCLA, and very wealthy kids. It was a beautiful. It was down the street from you know where OJ lived, and I used to live in Beverly Hills, so we used to drive down the hills, and come right into Westwood. And the Westwood was just a beautiful area where they had a lot of movie theaters and the clubs.
Yep.
So it was a lot of young energy going on there, a lot of restaurants. And so most of the time we came down there to eat. But very periodically, like I said, on Friday or Saturday, we would go into the club and to just hear how people were responding to what we were about to release, not what we already released. And when you go in the club, you hear all your stuff. You go, whoa, they already playing. You know?
At the club,
Yeah, they already played it. But I got to tell you that there was one moment where it was absolutely amazing for me that just sticks in my brain, and it had nothing to do with Solar. But it had to do with, you know, someone who really loves Solar, and that's Prince. And so I remember we came into to town, and we were going to the club to play the music, you know, to play our stuff. And then when Doves Cry came on, I was like, whoa, what is that?
Mm-hmm.
When Doves Cry, man, there was no bass line, just drums and vocals and keyboards, but no bass line. I was like, this song is so different. And it was so out there, and that's why he was so huge, because he was different. But anyway, I just wanted to say that because I got to, you know, salute, you know, Prince for what he did do for the industry and stuff. And so he actually came to our concert. Him and Morris Day came to our concert because they wanted to hear these guys that was making that noise. He wanted to know who are these guys? And so he was standing there listening to us, and guess what we did? We didn't even, I didn't know. I found out years later that he was there. I didn't know. But we played I Want to Be Your Lover in our show. And he loved it. I want to be your lover. And we had such, you know, the girls sang it so good. And Leon, because Leon Silvers could sing those real high falsetto things. And so it sounded so good. We loved it. We played that song to perfection, and he really loved it. He was proud of us. You know, he's like, wow.
Yeah.
So I found this out years later. But anyway, I found out from Morris, actually from Ricky Freeze, and Ricky found out from Morris.
I guess we're gonna go ahead and play some music, but after the break, I'm gonna talk about it. And I know you like it. I sound like a broken record, but I gotta mention it, especially for all the listeners, how impactful it was in the gaming industry. Once you guys got the songs or the songs were licensed to play on video games, and there's a few Solar songs, of course, that you played on, that are on the video games. But I just wanted to just share, after we come back from the break, how impactful it was in the gaming industry.
Okay, I have a question for you before we go.
The question
for you is, in 1979 and 80, did you spend all your pocket money on buying records?
I was
how
a broke 5 year. I was a broke 5 year old. I was a broke 6 year old. My uncle brought, and it's crazy that I do remember this, but there are those memorable moments when you're a kid. My uncle just bought a brand new 1980 Z28 Camaro, Chevrolet Camaro Z28. I'm talking about black. With the little gold pinstripes at
Love
the bottom
it.
That said Z28, and it had a T-top convertible. And
nice.
All of the tapes that he played was from Solar. I just noticed that big Solar. You know, didn't really just, like, interpret the wording of it at that time. You know, by the time I got six, I started reading I was reading at a third grade level. But I was like, Solar? I was looking at how that symbol was, and I saw all of these albums with that symbol, you know, and I'm listening to these songs. We're out in the car, or when we're barbecuing in the front yard, or in the side of the yard, and he'll have the car next to it. He'll blast the music out there, especially in summer. So I would hear, you know, you'd hear, of course, Funkadelic, and I'd hear, you'd hear all of that great music. You'd hear Bootsy Collins and because he was a big funk listener. He was a big fan of funk music. So you would hear Lakeside, you would hear Confunction or you know, all Xavier, all of this great music. A Cameo. God, how can I forget Cameo? So all of that to me was a part of my childhood. Now to answer your question, just to simply answer your question, no, I didn't really have any money to spend like that, because like I said, I'm five, I'm buying candy. But now my uncle, I'm sure every Friday when he got paid, he bought something from Solar. He bought some music every Friday.
Oh yeah.
And I was a child to that, because my uncle was 13 years older than me, so it was kind of like a big brother instead of being my mom's baby brother. Yeah, he's still around.
Let's talk to him when you get a chance. That would be fun.
We'll try to get him on. He'll probably be working right now, but I'll beg him. But if not, we'll definitely do it on a later date if that's not possible today.
Okay, or Saturday. Real quickly, last question for you. What age were you when you bought your first record, and what was it?
Oh, God. My first? I was probably about 13. That was my own money. I was probably 13 or 14, and I think the first tape that I bought with my money, if I could be wrong, was probably Guy. I bought Guy. I bought New Edition, and in fact, New Edition's Heartbreak album and Bobby Brown's Don't Be Cruel album, if I'm not mistaken, came out the same day. And I went to the record store. I think I had like $50 that I'd gotten, as a pre-birthday. And this was like around June. My birthday was in July. So I got like $50. So I bought those three tapes. So with my own money, or the money that was given to me so I could buy tapes. But, yeah, when I got more in the teenage years, that's when New Jack Swing started kind of making its, making its footing.
Making its move. Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
All right. Well, listen, we're going to take a break. We're going to take a music break, and when we come back, we'll come back with Lavelle Degree. I just want you to hear what he has to say about Dick Griffey, and then we'll get back into our conversation. We'll be right back on Solar Records Radio. Wardell Potts, Don Fleming.
when you start talking about some funk tracks, some dance tracks, some tracks that really make you want to get up and party, that was the tune. And the beat goes on. Man, that was hot. But, and what's really a privilege for me right now, you guys, is I not only have one of the vocalists off of that track, but if I'm not mistaken, Wardell, didn't you play a little bit on that?
Well, that was, you know, that's so funny because that was the very first song that I ever played drums on when I came to California for Leon Silvers. And the funniest thing about that is that Lavelle, you just said a little while ago, well, you know, I don't know how you felt, Wardell, when you first went on stage, but my first stage was really going into the studio, and I didn't have to do vocals and dance. I just could sit down behind the drums and just play, and I was shaking, but I didn't have to try to hold the tone and smile and look good, you know. So I got to give you all the credit in the world. But, yeah, And the Beat Goes On and Out the Box were the first two songs that I've ever recorded. And then right after that was I've just been blessed ever since then, man. And I've been the biggest fan of the Whispers ever since.
Well, that's wild because, you know, before that, Wardell, you know, Leon Silvers didn't have a drummer, you know, at all.
Yeah,
and
he did all
of his drum stuff on his knees, you know, and it was the most amazing thing when we were in the studio watching him, you know, put this music together. I would say that he was the first drum machine that ever was made, human drum machine, because he sat there with a bass drum and hit that bass drum to start the track. And he'd sit there and pound that bass drum to the beat that he wants. Mm-hmm. Then he would come up and he would do the snare, and then he would add the cymbals, and all on his knees. He would do one thing at a time, which was absolutely amazing. Then I guess he finally said, man, this is too much work. Let me call him. He knows how to play drums, and it'll be a heck of a lot easier.
Well, you know, it's so strange, Lavelle, because that, you know, I had to watch him because it took him a while to release himself from doing it because he was so used to doing it when I came here. And when I came here, I came out to California to audition for Dynasty. So when I made the group, then all of a sudden he says, you know, I thought I was leaving. He says, I need you to record something, and I'm like, going to the studio to record a track. And I'm like, okay, fine. And we went and then we did that track. And but still, that we even did second time around the following week, and we did, you know, on and on. But there were still songs that he still was keeping himself up. But it was a lot of work.
A lot of work. I've never seen that before. He had to
be losing like 10 or 15 pounds every time he was doing it.
But he was very, very anal about stuff. And at that point, you know, I mean, throughout his whole tracks, doing his tracks, he was very anal. They had to be perfect. And when you went in with vocals with him, you literally wanted to strangle him because,
no.
I mean, he would go, oh, I mean, you think you sang that line is the greatest, and he would say, one more time, or he'd find some note, well, it's a little bit, you know, just a little bit under, can you come up a little bit? I'm like, what the heck is he hearing? You know, we went through holy hell doing And the Beat Goes On.
Wow.
And that, man, you know, that we had to keep Scotty in the studio. There was several times where he was ready just to walk out because, you know, Leon would have him go over stuff. And he was like, man, I done sung this doggone line up 40 times. And you tell me it's a little under or it's a little over. But we knew when we heard The Beat Goes On that we had a hit. We knew it from the point to, from the time that we heard the track. And so we went out in the, I said, I ain't saying another, you know, a couple of curse words, and walked out of the studio. We went out in the back of the parking lot of the studio over there, and we said, Scotty, this is my song. Just, you know, suck it up and go on back in here and do this, which he did, and history was made with that song.
Yeah, something else.
I remember the first song he did with you guys like that. Well, that was Homemade Lovin'. Remember that song? That's the first song he was doing those things with. You called the numbers, yeah. And it was an amazing moment, man. But you know what? Thank God the Whispers did And the Beat Goes On because of you guys, and that song just shot up
Oh man, it was. I mean, when people said, when we found out that we had a gold record, we were like shocked. We were like, is that another Whispers or who? You know, we couldn't believe it. And then Dick Griffin came out and handed us our gold record, and then after that it was platinum, and he showed up again. So we were like blown away, and I thank God that we were able to convince Scotty to finish that project. And I thank God for Leon Silvers, because Leon Silvers was on another plateau, man. He was one of those producers like Babyface that came along, but he came along at the right time. He had a direction, he had a sense of great sense of music and what could be a hit, and he just wrote hit after hit after hit.
Uh-huh.
And he's still an incredible musician and a writer, and I thank him for everything that he's done in our lives, man, because without that, we wouldn't be where we are today, and we wouldn't have that 45-year plus career,
Yeah.
I'd like to give Dick Griffey the credit that he did on And the Beat Goes On too, because the song, when we originally did it, it was not actually placed. When Dick Griffey heard it, he said he wanted that song for the Whispers.
Exactly. Dick Griffey was sharp, too. His A&R ability was incredible, And, he was a man with a vision, Like you said, he started off, at Soul Train Records, him and Don Cornelius. But Dick Griffey always had more of a risk-taking kind of situation. So his mind was that he could do anything. You can't tell me I can't do what Terry Gordy has done. And I think with that attitude that he had is what really helped him to, that and a lot of ego. Egotistical people and smart people. If you got the combination of having the brain power along with a lot of ego where you say there's nothing that I can't do, then, the results are people like Dick Griffey that comes in and says, I want to be in the music industry and I can make records and I know I can be successful at it, and ain't nobody going to tell me anything different.
Mm-hmm.
His ability as an A&R guy, as a president of the company, he did wonders for people's
careers. Those
wonders. I mean, when you look back at it, to look at the roster that he had with Shalimar and Whispers, Lakeside, all of these artists, man, and every one of them, not one of them, every one of them had hit records.
Yeah.
That's incredible.
It is.
Absolutely.
So I thank God for him every day, man. He taught us so much, about the business and publishing and, writer's royalties. And, it was an education.
Absolutely. And, I just have to take my hat off to Dick Griffey for just doing all that for us and blessing us and giving us the opportunity, because he had a vision and he saw it through, and what a blessing it was for us. And we're so grateful, as like LaVelle DeGree. Thanks, LaVelle, for, sharing with us your feelings and stuff about, Dick Griffey and just, all the stuff that we did with you guys. He's right. And the Beat Goes On really was one of those songs that was a career-making song. And it really blessed those guys, and it blessed us as well, because it allowed that sound to continue to grow, because people wanted more and more and more. And so we were locked in the studio doing more and more. And so, anyway, guys, wow, that was really cool. And thanks to my brother, D.A. Williams, also for hanging out and just sharing. D.A. and I have done a lot of interviews together. And his dad was a very big DJ in the city of Philadelphia when I was a little kid. And his dad had a shop down the street from my dad's gas station. And so, strangely enough, we never met each other, but I knew his brother, because his brother was a well-known keyboard player, but I didn't know D.A. until years later. So, but anyway, all right, guys. So, play a little more music, and we'll be back on Solar Records Radio.
Bye.
Wow. Man, all I can do is reminisce. That's it. You know, just when you hear those songs, man, and it's just, you know, for me, just, you know, being a part of it, it's just, I go back to school, because that's exactly what it was for me as I was learning what Leon and Dick Griffey was looking for Solar. You know, it was a big learning lesson for me, and I'm so blessed. Thank God for that. And I want to thank Vaughn. Thanks, Vaughn, for your comment and stuff, keeping Solar alive. That's what we do at Solar Nation here, man. We want to keep Solar alive. We want to make sure that the generations coming up, that they know about Solar and the impact that we had and how blessed we were to be a part of that sound. And so, and we believe that so many were blessed because of it. And, you know, the music just completely started changing after we came out. People, you know, went from disco to more classy R&B again. And that was just a wonderful place to be a part of, you know, just being there with Solar and doing that with all those amazing artists, helping to just redirect music. And it was great. And I just want those young people to know how, you know, blessed we were that we had that opportunity, that Dick Griffey laid the map out, the road map out. Leon Silvers made sure that we went down that road in a classy way and got some great songs, great lyrical content, great grooves, and great success. So thank you, Vaughn, for that amazing compliment. I appreciate that. Love being your favorite DJ. I'm a DJ. That's so funny. I don't know anything about that. So can you remember how it felt when you landed, when you laid hands on the first, I'm trying to figure out what is he saying here. On Dynasty's first album, talk about it. Okay, so I just remember being a part of, thanks for the question, I just remember being a part of Dynasty for the first time and being in the presence of the whole group, and I could see in the eyes of everyone that everybody was very serious and very motivated, and very blessed to be in this room with Leon Silvers. There was a lot of pressure on us because we had to carry the load, and it was beautiful. And I thank God for that. Thank God for giving us that, all of us, that opportunity and bringing us all together to share our gifts together, to create the sound of Los Angeles Records. So, and so it was just an amazing feeling to answer your question. It was wonderful. It was an opportunity. We had to do what we had to do to make it all happen. We were really fortunate because we didn't know what was going to happen. We just did what we were told to do. And we followed our hearts, we followed our passion, and we just started doing our music. And fortunately for us, people responded to it in such a wonderful and positive way that, you know, we were able to continue. And Dick Griffey got more confidence in Dynasty. And unfortunately, what that meant is that Dynasty could not go on the road too much because Dick needed us in the studio, as I mentioned last week. So we couldn't go on the road. We had to stay. We couldn't promote Dynasty. We had to work on you know, writing songs and producing and playing on all the other artists' stuff and making sure that Dick Griffey had what he wanted. So that was, I hope I answered your question. On the first album, when I got my hands on the first album, that was, it's something that never gets old. Are you there, Don Fleming?
I'm here.
Okay. Yeah, so I'm just answering questions right now. So getting that, ooh, that's something that never gets old. As a matter of fact, I just picked up a platinum record in Los Angeles about 2 weeks ago from something I did in 1979. And it was still an amazing feeling to, you know, to get that. And that was all the way back in 79. So when we did our first album with Dynasty, it was very interesting because part of the album was already done before I got here. Leon Silvers was doing the numbers on the drums. And when I got here, then he let me go in and overdub and play drums on, you know, most of the other stuff. So it was an interesting time for me, to say the least. But I'm very grateful. One of my favorite songs that we did, I believe, was Groove Control. I think that was on the first album. I'm not sure. I think it was on the first album. And it was one of my favorite songs because I just felt that groove. And that was right around, I recorded that the same time I recorded something for Shalimar. Oh, man. If I could think of that song. You guys know the song, Pat, a simple song. But anyway, Right in the Socket. So I recorded those two songs right around the same time. Did my parents go out there and go out and buy my first record? No, I don't know. You know, my dad was a preacher, so he wasn't really into secular. And I think that they were just happy that I was happy. My parents, my mom definitely had it because my mom worked in a record store. So she had it, and people would come up to the record store, and the name of the store is called Kelly's Corner, and that was before they had malls. It was a big shopping center, and it's called Kelly's Corner in Philadelphia, and my mom was working in the record shop, and so people would come up there to buy the records and stuff, and she would say, my son's on that record, and so they see my name on the back, And that was a real honor for my mom to see her name on these albums that she's selling, right? And so, thank you, Miss Potts. My mom was promoting our records from the store, and so yeah, thank you. I didn't think about that one. That's very interesting because I remember when I went back to Philadelphia to perform there. It was crazy because it was about a year later. I hadn't been home, and then we go back and we're performing in this giant building, it was where I graduated from high school.
Right.
And they had and so we only used up half of the building for our graduation, but they opened it up and it was huge. I was like, whoa. I graduated from here. Now I'm here playing here at the Civic Center in Philadelphia, downtown Philadelphia. And I remember, you know, getting a limo to take me up. Yeah, and I remember getting a limo. Brad was the driver for us for Dynasty, and he took me in the limo up to my mom's shop where she worked in the store. And I remember going in there, and she was telling everybody I was there. I was signing records, And I didn't mean for all that to happen. I just wanted to see my mom. I just wanted to surprise her. And so, but I got surprised, and it was great. We had a wonderful time. And then I went back, and then we performed that night. And, you know, my sisters came, and you know, everybody in my neighborhood came to the show. It was just so amazing. And then my sister in the middle got really sick, and she had to go home. And so I asked the limo driver if they would take her home. And so they took her home. My sister had Crohn's disease. And if you guys, some of you guys know what that is, yeah. And so she was so skinny. And I was so scared that she wasn't going to make it. And my sister is still doing well. And Crohn's disease is pretty much gone. and that don't really happen. But she had a doctor that had a wife that had the same disease as my wife. And he did the same surgery on my sister as he did on his wife. And really now my sister can eat anything she wants. And so from the time she was 19 until she was like 58 or something, to 59, she could not eat hardly anything. She had to eat a strict diet. And then once she had that surgery, bam, now she can just eat, and she's just living and having a great time. So anyway.
Good for
thank
her.
You so much. Yeah, thank you, guys. Thanks for the questions and stuff. Let me see if there's anything else here. What, Don, anything come to your mind?
Well, yeah. The last time I was on, we had talked about, you know, and I know you like this subject too. We had talked about video games and how, you know, a lot of those older songs, those vintage songs, I didn't say old school or whatever. I mean, it's, you know, whatever terminology you want to use. But how a younger generation has kind of just took it and just ran with it through video games, through, you know, the advent of YouTube. And I got to ask you this, man, you probably told me before, so just chalk it up to my, you know, my age or whatever, how you'd be teasing me. But when you heard that the song that you played drums on and the beat goes on was on a video game, do you remember that moment?
Well, you know what? I always refer back to the moment of being in the studio. So but I don't remember the moment specifically that I heard it on video. I do remember saying, I hope we're getting paid. as a matter of fact, you've mentioned that a couple of times too.
Yeah, we had Raymond Calhoun. Yeah, I mean, we had Raymond Calhoun on the show, and
I
told him, you know, hey, outstanding. Yeah. I told him, outstanding, you know, the song, if I'm not mistaken, he produced and wrote. That song was on NBA, one of the NBA 2K games, one of the NBA basketball games there. And, you know, a lot of kids play that game. And to have that song on, you know, it brought, you know, people like me, of course, it brings that nostalgia. The kids are just like, whoa, what is this? So they go down that rabbit hole, YouTube, finding good music, and, you know, because this isn't about, oh, the music now is terrible, blah blah blah. I can get into that down the road later on or whatever, but I don't want to be that guy right now. But I guess the point is the fact that a lot of kids are yearning for that type of music. They're yearning for, to me, instruments. What is that's the word? Instrumentation. You know, when it comes to, I made that word up, when it comes to, you know, just the authenticity of music instead of, you know, just putting everything on a computer and auto-tuning it or saying, you know, calling women out of their name and saying, you know, drugs, and all of that left and right. Now, granted, there's an avenue for that. There's a lane for that. But you guys didn't have to do that, you know. And the kids are kids are starting to get it. Kids are like, my mother listens to this. I fell in love with it. I didn't like it at the time, but when I got older, you know, and now it's on a video game or whatever. You know, I'm in love with it, and that's all I listen to. You hear these type of testimonials all throughout the internet, man. So obviously,
So obviously,
there's a market to try to make good music. Not trying to relive the past or anything like that, but at least going back to some level of authenticity when it comes to music. It wasn't about copycatting. It wasn't about, you know, cookie cutter or anything like that. All of you guys had, every artist on Solar had your own distinctive sound, had your own distinctive brand, you know, with the whispers. You had, you know, the thing about it, you had twins, you know. Not only they made good music, oh, there's these twins with these mustaches, you know, or Lakeside. Mm-hmm. Oh, these cats are funky. And you know, Midnight Star, these cats are funky, but you knew that was Midnight Star, you know? Your group, I mean, Dynasty,
well,
they're funky, but they knew, people knew who Dynasty was. It wasn't go ahead.
So Dynasty is one of those unique situations because Dynasty was on everybody's record, so it's like, and a lot of times people were like, Dynasty sounds like Shalimar, Dynasty sounds like The Whispers, Dynasty sounds like Carrie Lucas, Dynasty sounds like, you know, Climax. So you guys said they didn't understand that Dynasty was playing on all these records, you know,
right.
It's like, and they didn't understand that. So, but this is the thing, Dynasty was the initial. The beginning, the initial sound of Los Angeles Records, that was Dynasty. But then it
I mean, the sound was different, though. People can make the comparisons and find out, Dynasty was basically the house band. But the voice was distinctive.
Right.
Yeah, Howard Hewitt. You knew what Howard Hewitt sounded like. You knew what Jody and Jeffrey and versus the twins versus Mark Wood versus who else I'm talking about? Ugly, you can sing, but you know.
I didn't sing.
So, okay, go with that. But no, seriously. You knew just the sound. You knew what, you know, Joyce Irby's voice was, you know, and you know, Bernadette Cooper. And Lorena Shelby, you know, it was just, you knew, you know, you just knew. Now, granted, that Leon Silver sound was distinctive. A lot of people can kind of just tell. And that's why there was a lot of copycats. A lot of those copycat sounds with that bass line, a lot of folks tried to kind of emulate that. So there was, there was the distinction there. So, you know. But going back to what I was saying, man, again, and I don't want to feel like I'm, you know, taking too much of the time or whatever, but the point is, you know, whether it's gaming, you know, again, you pick on me every time I have downtime, I'm playing a video game, because like I said, it keeps me sane. You know, after I handle my business, I work, whatever, I go work out, I, you know, shoot hoops or whatever, but when I'm in my zone, I'm ready to play a video game. And if I'm playing Grand Theft Auto, want to shoot somebody, figuratively in the game, but, you know, I can go to that game and listen to, and the beat goes on while I do it, you know. Now, now at the same time, you know, you have kids, again, kids are listening. Kids, we can have the discussion about the violence in video games and all that. I get that. But understanding, you know, just taking this element out, the music out, and just understanding, okay, yeah, this is a timepiece. This was supposed to be set in 1986 or 1984, whatever. And you're like, wow, that Kenny Burke is nice. You know, keep rising to the top. You know, or you know, or again, your songs, or Lakeside on the other Grand Theft Auto game. If I'm not mistaken, Fantastic Voyage is on San Andreas, Grand Theft Auto San Andreas. So, you know, again, there's those outlets, man, you know, it bridged that, to me, that generational gap. And that's the beauty of it. Again, take the music element out, you know, the violence again. I understand the conversation. But as far as the music itself, it's a great outlet for these kids to kind of go down that rabbit hole and learn their history. That's basically what I'm talking about.
Amen. Well said, my brother. And, you know, I love your passion about that as well. And so I, you know, want to just thank everybody. We got about 17 minutes left in the show. And it's been a wonderful day here. I hope you guys are all going to enjoy. I pray that you have a wonderful and safe and beautiful weekend. Got to give a shout out to Julianne. What's up, Julianne? Much love, sweetheart. And to the caller that called in, I'm sorry I didn't get you. You, as soon as I was going to pick your call up, you were gone. So I apologize to the caller who called in. But feel free to call back in anytime. I'm so sorry I missed your call. But thank you for, you know, for calling in. Thanks for all the questions as well to everybody. And if you guys want to link up with us, y'all can go to our page, SolarRecordsRadio.com or WardellPottsJr.com. And, you know, go to our store, you know, if you want to, you know, buy some of our shirts, hats, mugs, coffee mugs, and, you know, music. And so we're working on a few other things. We're just trying to do the best that we can independently, and we're hoping that you guys can support us. Support us any way you can. And there's also a Cash App there for you, or any just an app there if you want to, you know, donate to the show. We appreciate it so that, you know, we can continue to do this and bring good quality to the radio. We also are merging into a video for our interviews as well. So so get ready to be able to see Don Fleming and
get to see me.
When we
see all of me.
People.
No, not get all.
Oh, Lord. he's the little brother, right, with the big mouth. He just goes,
yeah, man.
Oh, Lord.
Oh, man.
But at least his ear is not squeaking. So we gotta count our blessings. We gotta count.
Oh, and shout out to T Meyer, man. We talk about Lakeside. Gotta talk about T Meyer. I understand, you know, he's got, you know, of course he got his own show on Solar Records Radio, but also as far as the live interviews and whatnot, T Meyer is gonna hang out with us too. So.
Oh, yeah, Mr. Original Lakeside will be there with us and stuff. And Julian said, hey, buddies, you know I'm listening to you guys. Thank you so much for the shout-out. You got it, pretty girl. You got it. We love you, and we appreciate you, sweetheart. She's a dedicated listener. She listens in her cell phone, and whatever she's driving or right, whatever she's doing, she takes us with her, and we're so grateful for her. Greg made me think about something, you know, like the moms. My mom was just so important to me. And when we were talking about what we were talking about earlier in regards to how, you know, your parents and stuff, you know, how that affected them. And so,
yeah.
You know, my career and just going to be, you know, why my mom selling those records and telling people about me. You know, so that's that indirect, like, I did what I wanted to do because I thought it was a good thing to do. I wasn't out there doing bad things. I really hated to make my mom, hurt my mom. I hated that when I disappointed her and let her down. So for me, I tried hard to not do that. And then when I saw how she really enjoyed what I was doing and how that blessed her, it just made me feel so good. And so that's why it's important for us to pay attention to what we do, you know, because it comes back one way or another and stuff. So I like to be able to go back and play some music and not be worried about, you know, what it says and, you know, if it's cussing somebody out, but it's saying lovely things and love songs and saying beautiful things. And I, you know, it usually takes, you know, maturity. People get older and then they say, oh, I need to calm down. Well, I'm so glad that I had calmed down at a young age because it really blessed my mom. And I can look back years later and now it blesses me. I'm going to play a couple more songs. Love you guys, and thanks again. This is a song that Jody did as she was moving on in her career. Love you guys. Thanks for tuning in to Soul Out Records Radio. See you guys next time.
feel. Now you're like the rest, unworthy of my best. Hasta la vista, baby.
I'm